Let's look at Romans chapter 16 and read verses 8 through 16. Just follow along as I read. Greet Amplius, my beloved in the Lord. Salute Urbane, our helper in Christ, and Stachys, my beloved. Salute Apelles, approved in Christ. Salute them, which are of Aristobulus. Did I get it right? Salute Apelles, approved in Christ. Salute them, which are Aristobulus' household. Salute Herodian, my kinsman. Greet them that be of the household of Narcissus, which are in the Lord. Salute Tryphena and Tryphosa, who labor in the Lord. Salute the beloved Persis, which labored much in the Lord. Salute Rufus, chosen in the Lord, and his mother and mine. Salute Asyncritus, Phlegon, Hermes, Patrobas, Hermes, and the brethren which are with them. Salute Philogus and Julia, Nerus and his sister, and Olympus, and all the saints which are with them. Salute one another with an holy kiss. The churches of Christ salute you. I want to point out tonight a couple of things from this passage, that a healthy church enjoys special relationships. A healthy church enjoys special relationships. The title tonight is Connection and Affection. The first point tonight is that Paul highlights the close relationship he enjoyed with some of the believers in Rome. He highlights the close relationship he enjoys with some of the believers in Rome. He uses expressions of endearment and closeness. You see this in verse 8. He says, greet Amplius, and what's the word that he uses? My beloved, he says. Here is somebody who he is very close to, and really, he calls him his beloved. You see that also in verse 9. He calls Stachys my beloved. And then he says the same in verse 12 of Persis, my beloved. And that is a special word. It is a term of endearment. One Bible dictionary says that it means dearly loved and cherished, sometimes preferred above all others and treated with partiality. If you think of that, you could think back to Joseph, how Abraham, Jacob loved Joseph in a very special way and made him that coat of many colors. He loved him. And then, of course, Benjamin, his youngest son. He loved him especially well. You know, as a kid, you had different toys, you had different blankies, and you had different animals. You all are looking at me like you don't know what I'm talking about. Jessica, you had an animal. You didn't have an animal. You did. What did you have? You didn't have any? Get the girl an animal, Rita. It's something. You had a Barbie doll or something? You had a camera, maybe? You have a camera? Sleep with your camera? I had a monkey. I had different things. I had a monkey. His name was, what was his name now? Zippy. I was going to say Morris, but that's what my grandpa called him. It wasn't Morris. It was Zippy. And he had a fuzzy head and a hard, rubber, squishy face. And I could smell him. He had a special rubbery smell. It was probably chemicals that are outlawed today, but... and he fell apart. So my mom took my dad's old letter jacket from high school, and it was kind of fuzzy on the outside, so she cut a piece off with his permission, and she gave him red fuzzy hair and gave him a new hairdo. And then we went to Toys R Us, and we went to the Cabbage Patch doll section, and we figured out that this monkey wore Cabbage Patch size clothing, of all things. So I picked out an outfit from the Cabbage Patch doll section because it matched Zippy's size. And that was good enough for the rest of my life. He didn't fall apart after that. But I love Zippy. I have pictures of me and Zippy. I had other animals, and I forget what they were. But I remember Zippy, the monkey. I'm not going to take testimonies tonight, but you have some animals too. Except for Jessica. Pray for Jessica. Well, I'm surprised. Well, we're getting close here tonight, at least. Here, Paul, he's not so much saying he doesn't love other people, but what he is saying is there are people in the church that he has a very affectionate love for. Is there anyone like that in the church? Men, are there any other men in the church that you really do? You're close. I mean, when you say brother, it's not just a theological term. It's not just something that you happen to know is true in the Bible, but you are close. You can talk about anything. I mean, girls, ladies, do you have that? I do not necessarily, as a pastor, encourage men and ladies who are not married to have that depth of closeness. I think that's a little something you need to be careful of. But that same gender closeness, do you have that? And sometimes in this society, we don't. We think we're close because we talk about all kinds of stuff we shouldn't talk about, and we do all kind of things together that we shouldn't do, but that's not close. Do you have anyone like that? And Paul did. He had some people in this church who he knew from other times in his life that he could say, I guess you could say, I love you, man, that kind of thing, right? There are sometimes I do feel like saying that to another man in the church, you know, I love you. And sometimes it seems right. Sometimes it doesn't seem right because I'm not sure if they're going to understand it right, but I feel like saying it. Because I do. I love you. I love the people of this church. And this world is so messed up what that can mean. Sometimes we have a hard time saying it. But we should. We should be able to say that. Do we love one another that way? Are there people in this church that you would say, man, I'm so thankful for you to have you in my life. You're such a blessing. I love you. Then he says in verse 13, he says, salute Rufus. That's probably his stuffed animal. I'm kidding. Thinking of a dog or something. Chosen in the Lord. And then it says, and his mother. So Rufus had a mother. And mine. Well, I don't think this is Paul's, from what I could tell studying this. I don't think this is Paul's long-lost brother here. I think what we're talking about is there's a son, he has a mother, they're in this church, and the way that Paul knew them was his mother, the mother of Rufus, was kind of like an adopted mother to him. That's the kind of idea I think we're looking at. He had some kind of a family type, not a family actual, but a family type relationship with Rufus and the family there, and apparently maybe the father wasn't saved or wasn't in the picture. Some, this is interesting, some think that Rufus was actually the son of the man, Simon, in Mark 15:29. That's the man who carried the cross for Jesus halfway to Gethsemane. Halfway to dying on the cross there. I don't know, we can't prove that. There are probably more than one Rufuses in the world at that time, but that's an interesting thought. That maybe he had passed away and Rufus was left behind with his mother and Paul knew them very well and they were able to sit down and share that story of their father, their friend, their husband doing this for Jesus. You never know how things work, how they go. But let me ask this question. Are there any, if you're younger here especially, but it could be any range of younger, let's say anyone under 100 years old, is there anyone in this church who says, you know, there's some older saints in this church? And here, cross-gender really is not so much of a problem. Single or married is not so much of a problem. Is there anyone older in the church that you say, they're kind of like a grandpa, kind of like a grandma, kind of like a mom, kind of like a dad to me? I mean, they're not really, but I view them that way. Is there anyone like that? A good, healthy church will have some of that. And if you're older, you're on the older side of things, you say, you know what, is there someone in the church that could use a little parenting, a little grandparenting, not telling them what to do, but from the love side of things. A little note in the mail, letting them know, as an older person in the church, I do watch you, I do pray for you, I thank God for you. I think sometimes older people in a church, it's so much easier to gripe and complain and to gossip about the things that younger people, even younger families, are going through. And we can talk about what it used to be like back in the day and how things have changed so much and all this kind of finger-pointing can go on. Instead of reaching out and showing love and appreciation and this kind of spiritual parenting, not pushing yourself, but just little acts of love and kindness, words of encouragement. And God can open doors where you could say something that you feel like saying sometimes. And, you know, the younger will take it. But a good family of God needs this. So let's nurture that. Let's foster that. And it takes steps of action. Don't wait for someone to ask you. And then verse 6 15 here, you see this awkward phrase, salute one another with a holy kiss. How do you salute with a kiss? Now, draw a picture of that. That would look kind of funny, because in our mind, saluting means what? How do you do that with a kiss? Okay, that's just strange. How do you salute? So, well, saluting just means to say hello, greet somebody. And it was a cultural norm. It was appropriate social etiquette, not just for anybody. This wasn't just something you would do to somebody at the store, right? But if they were in your family, or if they were someone that you were close to as a friend, or if someone deserving honor and respect. So in a sense, because I'm the pastor, you would probably all, you know, back in this culture, kiss me when you left church. Strange, I know. But that's probably what would happen. I mean, in Russia, they still kiss on the lips over there, I hear, in some places in the Ukraine and all. That's just strange. My previous pastor used to take some trips over there, and he said it was so weird. He is the total non-touch type, total Midwest culture. I mean, totally, every bit. And just imagine him trying to kiss other people on the lips in Russia is just really funny. I couldn't do it, probably. But one of the things that I've learned since coming here to the city and pastoring here, from talking to people and just observing it, there is something about an appropriate physical touch that is important. We have to be careful. And you know me, as pastor, I have some rules in the children's ministry. There are things we do not do. However, at the same time, if someone says hi to you, that's nice. If someone shakes your hand, that's okay, special. If someone pats you on the back, does that communicate anything? It actually wakes a certain part of you up that's healthy. We live in a culture and society that is so starving for any kind of physical, the appropriate physical touch. They look for it in ways that they shouldn't because they just never had it. Never had it right. So they go after it. I tell you, for instance, you read between the lines, use some wisdom and sense here, but this is true. Young men who grew up in this culture, if they don't have a dad who hugs them and tussles their hair and pats their back and wrestles with them and these kind of things, and has men in the church give them a good thump on the back sometimes and mess up their hair, they're more exposed to things. I'm serious. And when you're surrounded in a community of faith where there's appropriate pats on the back and tussles of the hair, I mean, don't tussle Jeff's hair for the charion, or mine either, for that matter. But I'm being silly, but you know what I'm saying, right? And I'm trying to do better at this. I don't know if I've given some of you guys a hug yet. I do try. Sometimes I think I need to give this person a hug. It's not my personality, but I do it. And you know what it is? It's actually, for me, it's saying, I do. I love you. I appreciate you. And just doing that, it does make you closer. And it's very appropriate, actually. I'm serious. Do be careful, again, of the cross-gender. I have to say that. We have to be careful about that. But this is something, ladies, the same thing. Give each other a hug. I know you don't, I don't need to preach about that, really. I think I just need to preach to the men. But this matter of that, a handshake is not necessarily the same thing. So showing that is actually important, I think, from a psychological standpoint and a spiritual standpoint. Anyway, in a healthy, strong church, what I draw from these things is that there are strong networks of family-like, affirming, affectionate relationships. And if a church can learn this, a church, apart from the teaching, apart from the counseling, apart from the fellowship activities, can actually go a long way towards protecting and strengthening the body against things by just being normal and natural about this. Number two, not only does a church have affectionate, close relationships, especially those single genders, and then across the generations sometimes, that grandparent-type, grandma relationship, grandpa. It also, Paul here, highlights some intriguing relationships among believers, not just affectionate, close family-type ones, but intriguing relationships. You look in verse 10, and you see this. Salute Apelles, approved in Christ. Then here it is. Salute them which are of Aristobulus's household. Now, there are probably more than one Aristobulus, but I'm just going to throw this out here as a possibility. It's an option. It might be referring to a well-known man named Aristobulus, who happened to be Herod the Great's grandson. And he spent his life in Rome. He had a lot of slaves and household employees. And it's very possible that there were some people in this church at Rome, because Aristobulus was well-known. He lived in Rome a lot of the time. It's possible that some of the people that he employed and some of his slaves, maybe even relatives, had gotten saved and were in the church. It's possible. I don't know. Verse 11, salute Herodion, my kinsman. Greet them that be of the household of Narcissus, which are in the Lord. Again, another example. There was a man named Narcissus. He himself was a free man who was one of the empire's most powerful people under Emperor Claudius. Again, it might not be the same person, but it might, because people knew who this guy was. It's interesting because it's not the guy, it's not Aristobulus, and it's not Narcissus who is the person he's greeting. He's greeting people who are identified as being a part of these people's households. So that's kind of how we draw this connection, and history does show people like this. Also consider Romans 16:22. Or I'm sorry, is that right? No, that's the wrong reference. It should be, I believe, Philippians 4. End of the chapter, and I forget what verse. Philippians 4, end of the chapter. Paul says, those of Caesar's household greet you. Now, when Paul wrote Philippians, he was actually writing from prison in Rome. And he's saying that the people that are employed by Caesar, working in the prison system and all, some of them were getting saved, and they were sending greetings back. And so again, you have this idea that people were in the church at Rome who had connections to important places, employed by important people. Connections. Acts 13:1 is another fascinating example of this. You see Paul, you see Barnabas teaching in the church at Antioch of Syria. You also see a couple of other men teaching. And then you see this man named Manaen, who was a childhood friend of Herod the king. This is a guy who grew up playing whatever they played back then, kickball or something, with Herod the Great. He went to school with him. He was a buddy. They probably played Nintendo together many hours or something, whatever they did back then. But him and Herod the king had been friends. And now this guy, you know, on social media, you have these things where, you know, how far distantly are you connected to this person? You know what I mean? This is a number one connection point to Herod the king, and he was a teacher in the church at Antioch of Syria. Not just a member, but a teacher. How cool is that? And so I think what I'm trying to point out tonight is that even though in a church, you go back to the first century church all the way to today, the majority of a church is filled with just what I would call ordinary people, unnamed, unfamous people. But a church, when it's doing its job of reaching people, spreading the gospel and the love of Christ to the connections that we all have, you follow those connections enough, not on social media, but in real life. It's amazing where those connections can go sometimes, the kind of people that some of us end up getting connected to, and that's not so that we can become important. It's because the gospel deserves to get to all of these places. And in a growing, healthy church, the gospel does go to some very neat places. So don't underestimate what God can do. Could it be that sitting here tonight is somebody who needs to talk to somebody who knows somebody who will talk to somebody who's in an important place? But if you don't talk to the somebody you're supposed to talk to, that's never going to happen. Think about that. Here you have in this church some very close family-type relationships with people who were not really family, they were in Christ. And then you see some interesting possible connections to people in some intriguing places. Some other insights here from the end of Romans.